Good afternoon. Good afternoon. This is Linda Schreier in LA talking to Neva Durell Smith in, what is it called?
Durham, New York.
Durham, New York, yes. Long distance, Durham, New York.
Alps.
Say that again?
I said always, also known as the Irish Alps.
The Irish Alps. Yeah. So, hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Nice to hear your voice again.
You too. You too.
So, I would like to introduce Neva, and I would like Neva to add to my introduction with anything I've left out. Neva, from what I know of you, you were born in Israel. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And raised in New York?
I was raised in a suburb of Philadelphia, actually.
Ah, okay. And then moved to L.A. and became a filmmaker.
That's right. And I lived there for 19 years.
Right. And then you went back to the East Coast when? Like 3 months ago?
Yeah, my first day here was September 9th, actually, and about 2 months.
Wow. So you have yet to survive a winter and see what you've done.
Yes, exactly. I will reassess this decision once when I'm in after winter.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Well, Neva, I know that you know that I am the co-author of the novel Tears and Tequila, which, and the main character, Joey, who's sort of a combination of my co-author, Joanne Lautman, and myself, she just moved from New York to L.A. and hoped to leave all of her losses behind. But in fact, she didn't. Because you can't really leave your losses behind because they come with you. And
That's right.
So I'm wondering about you. I just looked up about your husband, Kaz. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yes.
So I see that he passed away in 2011. Is that correct?
Yes, May 3rd, 2011.
Yeah. Well, I just want to tell anyone who's listening that I read a fantastic piece that Neva wrote that just I could not forget about. And in fact, I don't want to tell you what it's about. I'd like Neva to tell us more about the piece she wrote and also about the decision to make this move across country and whether you think in part you were hoping to leave losses behind.
Good question. So thank you for that. Thank you for reading that essay and the kind words. So really briefly, my story, which I talked about in that essay, is that 2 years into my relationship with Kaz, we met online in 2007 and started dating in 2008 in earnest. And 2 years later, he discovered that he had a terminal tumor. And I stayed with him. I moved in with him. We together. And I was basically, you know, with him for the rest of his life, which was 13 months of being sick, and we married near the end of his illness, and he died about 11 days afterwards.
Oh, God. What a story.
Yeah. And he was, when he died, he was 43, and I was 40. So we were, you know, quite young, and never we would have to deal with anything like this. And
yeah,
it all happened very fast. but it was incredible. It was painful, obviously, but it was an incredible experience, I have to say.
When you say incredible, what do you mean?
I mean that it taught us a lot about each other, about ourselves, about love, about commitment, about how strong we both were in different ways, and you know, you learn a lot about someone when they're sick and taking care of them, and people, and also how someone approaches the end of life. I mean, it was you know, it was very heavy, but it was also very inspiring, I thought, because Kaz was incredibly brave and always had a positive attitude and how to face things at the end. And incredible also because of the depth of the love that we both felt. I feel like our relationship really went a lot faster. It had to go a lot faster and a lot deeper, much quicker, if that makes sense. Because of everything that was going on and because of this, you know, very real sort of ticking clock and some of the issues that we were dealing with, you know, it really sort of catapulted our relationship, you know, into areas that we wouldn't normally have been dealing with until, you know, decades later if we stayed together. So
yeah, it's really true. That's, boy, is that ever true, that he was so young, that you both were so young, and that it happened so fast.
Yes.
Yeah. So did you have any, you know, thank you for those moving words. I almost hate to ask you to talk about it because I'm sure it must be very painful to talk about.
It is painful. And I haven't actually told the story like that verbally in quite a while, but so I'm glad that I can get through it, you know, without getting emotional or anything.
Oh, for sure. You know, my mother passed away 8 years ago in New York. I was living in L.A. at the time, and it was about a three-month process from the first breaking of the first hip and recovery and getting her home, and then it's a long story. Anyway, I went to New York for the summer to take care of her, and after she passed away, I mean, my mom was 88, so it wasn't like your husband, but nevertheless, I was so grief stricken by her passing, and I actually took a year to mourn her loss. I just didn't know that I would do that, but I did. I took a year, and when people would ask me about how I felt about being back there the whole summer, I found myself saying that the one thing that I learned from that, I learned many things from that experience, but one of the things I learned was that I was a person who could be counted on, because, you know, I was just really there for her, even though it meant, you know, being 3,000 miles away from my whole family. And I learned that I could do that. And that was, you know, in the midst of the sorrow, that was an enriching experience in a way. And it sounds like you must have had the same experience because you were there.
Yeah. I did. And first of all, I'm sorry to hear that your mom passed away. That's difficult at any age.
Thank you.
I think that you learn a lot about yourself when you're put under incredible pressure or put in situations that are really emotionally difficult, and but where you are required to keep functioning. I mean, I would have, you know, personally liked nothing more than to, you know, cry and, you know, really like, I mean, you know, part of what I write about in my book is that when you're a caregiver, you can't actually break down. You know, you have to sort of, you have to keep taking care of things. And I think that that's very difficult and very challenging. And, you know, a lot of times I think all the emotions come afterwards because you've been sort of keeping everything in check for so long. But on the flip side of that, yeah, you realize that you have this incredible strength, and, you know, it comes sometimes from places we don't even realize we had that strength. You know, but the situation sort of requires you to find it. In a strange way, it was a somewhat empowering experience because,
yeah,
you know, I felt like it was the most difficult thing I'd ever been through. And, you know, and as much as I thought I might have a nervous breakdown, I didn't. I actually took care of things, I think, pretty well. And, you know, even after he passed away, because, you know, as you probably know, things don't just stop when a person dies. There's still a lot of things to take care of. And so that was, in a way, enlightening, I guess, to me that, you know, it was kind of like a growing up. It was the first time I was ever, like, all responsible for someone else,
responsible for someone else. Mm-hmm.
And so it forced me to grow up, like, really fast.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, listening to you, I'm thinking about the novel, Tears and Tequila, and the people in the novel who are in the grief group that the main character ends up against everything she wishes leading, they're in their 30s. And each of them has lost a husband or a wife. And, you know, I'm having these great conversations with you and with Megan Devine, and there'll be more. Sometimes I wish I had talked to you before I wrote the book because there are definitely things I'm learning from you that I wonder if I imparted that. And specifically, everyone I've spoken to who's a young widow like yourself has echoed pretty much the same comments. For example, obviously it was the hardest thing you ever had to do. And then after, one person I spoke to said, after doing that, living through that, I realized I could do anything. And I also realized I could take any risk, whatever. I've already done the hardest thing I could ever do in my life. I mentioned her on every interview. It's so funny. Hey, Abby Carter, I'm talking about you again. Abigail Carter wrote a book called The Alchemy of Loss. Do you know it?
Yes, I'm familiar with it.
And she wrote about something I always talk about as well, which is after she lost her husband in 9/11, she began living what she called the unintentional life, the life she never intended to live, which was, you know, so different than the life she planned. And, you know, she has said that there was a lot of freedom in that unintentional life, along with the grief. So I wonder if that's something that you've thought about, this life you're living now that you never intended to live.
Yes, I have thought about that quite a bit, actually. I often think about what life would have been like.
Yeah.
None of this had happened. Where would what would I be doing, where would we be, you know. But then it definitely was a huge, I definitely wouldn't be, I know I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now if, you know, everything hadn't happened the way it did. And
you mean you wouldn't be writing this memoir? Is that what you mean?
I wouldn't be writing a memoir. I probably wouldn't be living, you know, where I am at the moment. I don't know. I feel like part of how what Kaz and I went through and watching him die at a young age, and also from watching the way he lived his life in general, it just really made me feel like, you know, life, it really reinforced that life is short and you have to do what makes you happy now. Like, don't wait until later date. Don't wait till things are perfect and everything is in line. You know, just do it now. Do what makes you happy now. And so I discovered after he passed away that I really, really enjoy writing, like more than I guess I thought I did. And not just, you know, beforehand I was writing screenplays, but after he died, I started writing a blog and nonfiction and, you know, a memoir. And I discovered I really liked that. And I wanted to pursue that and do it all the time and get paid to do it. And you know, just, and not that I don't want to make films anymore, which is what I used to do, but I wanted to try to incorporate this new type of expression into my life on a more, you know, full-time basis as opposed to like a hobby. And so I decided to pursue that passion and to really throw myself into it, you know, 100% and just go for it.
Isn't it interesting? You know, it's, I mean, it sounds to me like you have something you want to say now, and maybe I'm misinterpreting this, but you have something you really want to say, and that's what's fueling your passion for writing in this new form.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, you and I talked earlier about the fact that both of us came from screenwriting backgrounds to the writing we're currently doing. This is, as you know, my first novel, and having written probably 1,000 hours of television scripts,
right.
I am... You know, you and I talked about the advantages of having that kind of background when you're writing what you're currently writing and what I was writing and about to write another novel. It's so interesting. I personally, you know, it's so interesting to me that you say that you sunk into this deeper writing space after his death. I think that... I don't know if you'd agree with this, that writing for screenplays, I was never able to get to that kind of depth. I think I wasn't able to get to that depth as I was by writing a novel. You know, the sheer volume of hours you have to spend on one project is, for example, is so different, right? I mean, I told you it took me 5 years to write this book. It wasn't the only thing I was doing, but it was a long time.
Yeah.
And also, you have something to say, and it's taking, you know, this forum to say it in.
Yeah, I find that not only do I guess I have things to say, but I am also more drawn to to nonfiction because, I don't know, I have this, I can't get into made-up stuff as much anymore. I don't know exactly why, but it's more challenging for me. I mean,
were you ever a fiction person?
It's more challenging for me to be passionate about it, actually.
Were you ever a fiction person, or were you always a nonfiction person? Lover, reader, I mean.
You know, I actually was more into fiction when it came to books.
Mm-hmm.
But I sort of developed a real love for nonfiction recently, like in the last few years. I'm just blown away by some of these stories that people write about their own lives. I mean,
you know, I teach memoir writing. It's something I've been doing for 20 years. And I'm now telling my students that I'm seeing there's a new depth of honesty in the writing that I'm reading constantly. And I mean, I could be wrong, but that's what I'm seeing. I think people are going deeper and becoming more transparent and being really willing to write about the pain. And I don't know if that's true, but that's what I seem to be seeing. And I'm encouraging all my students to go that deeply, because I think that, and I think that's what you're talking about, is the depth of honesty and truth. You know, for me as a storyteller for my whole life, I've written so many pieces of memoir that I've never published. I don't even know where to start, because every class that I teach, I also write in. But I've never published them. I just was doing other things. But I think that for me as a storyteller, I like to sink into fiction to tell the stories I have to tell, I think. Not that I don't write in both forms, but I think one form informs the other. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
I agree with that.
You know, and I've spent my entire life living in my imagination. And so when I wrote Tears of Tequila, I've been asked this question very often. There are a lot of characters there. And in order to write what I think was an accurate depiction of their grief, I had to, you know, become sort of each of them as I wrote them and feel what they felt. And for me, that's expanding, because when I write my own memoir pieces, I'm only writing from my perspective. So it's expanding for me to try and be someone else who, in the book I have, there's a woman whose husband killed himself. And I had to really become her to write her. And I got what it must feel like to be that person. And, you know, that was different for me. So, you know, I think it's all great. We want to write our truth, whether it's fiction or it's nonfiction. We just want to write it. And if we're writers and we want to publish it, we want other people to be able to feel what we felt. And, you know, I'm so glad that you're writing a memoir. That's amazing and life-changing, I would think.
Yeah, I would say it is. It's been incredibly rewarding already, and you know, it's still in progress, and I haven't sold it yet. But you know, no matter what happens with it, it's been incredibly rewarding and helpful, and enlightening, and satisfying.
Yeah. That's so great. There's kind of nothing more that one can ask for from writing than that. Isn't that true?
Yeah, I totally, totally agree. And, you know, I think that all these different types of writing that we're talking about, I mean, even, you know, in screenplays, I mean, you know, at the highest level of screenwriting, there's incredible depth. And
incredible,
you know,
yeah.
Some of my favorite, you know, I mean, films are always going to be a great love of mine. It's not like I've turned my back on them, or even television these days is incredibly
decent
and
yeah.
wonderful. And, you know, there's all kinds of amazing content out there.
I know. I know.
I think that it's nice to explore different ways of expression. And, you know, some of my mentors, people that I really respect and look up to, write in all types of mediums, you know, screenplays,
right.
novel, article,
right.
you know. And that's
right.
sort of, I guess, what I want. That's how I see my career sort of in the long run, is expressing in various mediums. And
you know, it's so funny because before I was a writer of words, I was a writer of music. I started writing music when I was 18 years old. And wrote a jazz film score for a short film. And then I proceeded to write music until I was, I guess, in my mid-30s. And just as you said, I found the same depth of emotion in writing music that I find in writing. You know what I mean? I would get to that place where I had absolutely no idea who was writing this. You know, it was
right.
just
yeah.
that feeling of it being written through me. And which is the same thing I feel when the writing is good, I feel transported by it. And so it's just what you said about other writing in all the different mediums. And I'm not a painter, although my mother was, and I assume that for an artist, a visual artist, they go through the same process. So I guess the form can hold all of our deepest emotions, no matter what form it is.
Yeah, that's true. It's interesting. We have a similarity in that our mothers were both artists.
Oh, I didn't know your mother was an artist.
My mother was an artist who also worked in various mediums throughout her life, painting, drawing, charcoal, pastel, printing.
My mother, too. My mother, too.
You know, she really went, and at one point she did poetry. And she.
My mother, too.
When,
this is crazy. My mother, too.
Yeah. And she, and also I lost my mother when I was 22. So that's interesting.
Oh,
creative mothers.
You know, it's so interesting, Neva, because as some people know, I'm sitting here talking to you in a building that I call the Memory Palace. When my mother passed away, she left behind 500 works of art of hers in New York. And ultimately, I moved them out here. And we built a building in our backyard to sort of house and display them. And they all came out here. And there's a lot of them are in the back room. But all the walls that I'm sitting around are hung with my mother's work. And
wow.
I know.
Amazing.
I know.
That's
and I... It's so comforting for me, and it's so nurturing for me to look around and remember that my mom went to her studio every single day. And, God. And she, you know, this is, you know, 80 years of creative work sitting around here. So it inspires me to reach into that place. And it also comforts me because, as I said, I'm a child of Holocaust survivor parents. So having her story die when she died was not okay for me. I needed to have as much of her story around me so I could feel it deep in myself. So it's interesting that we both are daughters of creative mothers. What we learned and what we didn't, I don't know about your mom, but my mom wasn't the most... shall we say, motherly? She wasn't the most mother. She became that way. But when I was young, she was really, she was just really pursuing her passion, which was art. And
right.
So I think we got a lot of gifts from them and learned various things.
Yes, I think so. My mother was a total inspiration to me, and she was to my siblings as well, and to everyone who met her. I mean, she's, you know, I'm sure like your mother, incredible woman.
How great. Lucky us. Lucky
yeah,
us.
Yeah, sure.
Well, Neva, I have the feeling that we've come to the end of our time from looking at my clock here.
Wow, it flew by.
I know. I could talk to you for probably 3 more hours, and I hope we do. I think we have to sign off for this little moment here. And I just want to thank you for talking to me. It's a pleasure and an honor, and I wish you the best of luck with this memoir.
Thank you so much.
I'm sure it's going to be terrific. Does it have a title?
The working title is The History of Us.
Oh, that's a great title.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. It's such a pleasure. So we'll stay in touch?
Yes, we will. We'll talk again.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.